And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is January. It is the 12th. It is 2023. Good afternoon, Dave.
And it's Thursday.
It's Thursday. Did I neglect that?
No, that's okay. It was a good lead-in for me.
I was testing.
There you go.
I was testing.
Gosh, another week almost gone by. Hey, happy whatever day. handful of celebrations out there today, but none that have resonated with me, much less knocked me off my chair. There's National Marzipan Day. I had to look that one up.
Oh, I like marzipan.
Well, I should have asked you. National Curry Chicken Day, National Kiss a Ginger Day. And I don't mean a spice. But the one I'm going with is National Pharmacist Day. Only because I enjoy seeing the local pharmacy staff smiling faces every month. Plus, my wife and I got our golden retriever puppy, Macy, from our local pharmacist. And in my mind, yeah, that's more than enough. So happy National Pharmacist Day, Melody.
All right. Well, yeah, and it's a good old Americans out there keeping them employed very
that's
well.
That's right. There you go. Yes.
Lucky us. Well, we did have a lucky us today, believe it or not. We had a nice moving gold today, $21.80. Did break 1900 just briefly. Currently, we're at 1899. Silver was up 40 cents at $23.90. Platinum was up a buck at 1078. Palladium was up $16 at 1866. The USDX today was down 0.99 at 102.26. Crude oil was up 81 cents at 78.22. The Dow was up 216 points, 34,189. S&P up 13 at 3,983. NASDAQ was up 70 at 11,001. Euro, they were, European markets were all strong. Asian markets were all strong. 10-year yield was down. It dropped quite a bit, 3.424%. And let's just take a peek. Natural gas was up a half a percent to 3.688. So let's go ahead and see exactly what some of the news today is. They did come out, I believe, with the CPI today. And the Consumer Price Index, which measures the cost of a broad basket of goods and services, fell 0.1 for the month. And naturally, that's everybody's estimate. And that equated to the larger month-over-month decrease since April 2020. Even with the decline, the headline CPI rose 6.5% from a year ago, highlighting the persistent burden that the rising cost of living that has placed on U.S. households. We talked about U.S. debt yesterday. We talked about how people are using their credit cards just to get by. Even the volatile food and energy prices, the so-called core CPI, that rose 0.3%. The core was up 5.7% from a year ago. Even though we saw a steep drop in gasoline, that might have been responsible for most of that monthly decline. Prices at the pump tumbled almost 9.5% for the month, and now they're down 1.5% from a year ago after surging past $5 a gallon back in mid-2022. So fuel oil slid 16% for the month, and of course that also contributed to a total of 4.5% decline in the energy energy segment. But what's important to us, food, that increased 0.3% in December. Let's see, what else do we have in there? Medical care services increased. Apparel prices rose modestly, but they still rose. Transportation services were up 0.2%. They're still 14% higher from a year ago. It's hard to believe that airline fares fell 3.1%. That's really hard to believe, but they're still up 28% from a year ago. 28%. And look at the crap that you have to put up with from them. I was just reading an article. It was on one of the cruise lines where they were actually going to take away, you know, that nighttime people, they come in and they turn your bed down and put a little chocolate on your pillow and all this kind of stuff. They're going to eliminate that. But yet they're going to increase the gratuities that you pay the employees. So now they take your services away and yet you pay more. And that's America for you. The more you pay, the less you get. And
well,
I guess it's happening everywhere.
Not to be outdone, Moody Analytics chief economist Mark Zandi said, ironically, in my humble opinion, inflation is quickly moderating.
Yeah, what's he know?
Obviously, it's still painfully high, he added, but it's quickly moving in the right direction. Quickly moderating, oh, geez. Well, CPI's, as we know, is the most closely watched inflation gauge in the nation. Fed, however, prefers a different measure that adjusts for changes in consumer behavior. Though they say that CPI is part of their puzzle. There was some indication in this data today that consumers are indeed shifting behavior. Along with that came a note of caution in that the December decline was largely fed by a drop in gas prices. A decline that will likely not continue over the long haul, given market dynamics and consumer demand, especially as the summer approaches. One economist, State Street Global Advisor Simona Makuta, Hakuna Matata, said, "We don't expect the next report, that is January, to look as good as this one, but the trend is favorable." That is the one that comes out next month for this month. Of course, Fed members are weighing how much further they need to go with interest rate hikes that they're using to rein in inflation. There's now a mixture of signals, some speeches today from some voting members. The FOMC suggested, a slowdown to 25 basis points at the February 1st. Conclusion. Others have been less specific, but suggesting just the opposite. Who knows? I mean, after the CPI report was released, the Fed futures market pointed toward a 92% probability the Fed would approve just a 25 basis point hike. Next month. That's a significant jump from the 62% of just 1 week ago, and even the 77% from yesterday. And I must confess, it's a huge move in the opposite direction from what I wrote in last Friday's blog. Still, Melody, there's still a lot of time left between today's report and that February 1st decision for that needle to swing back toward a 50 basis point hike that I still see coming.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I agree. I was a little early to the party when as long as the stock market is doing well, yeah, it's a possibility that, you know, he could just do a small one. But I have to ask the question, you know, they think that it's improving, and old Mark Zandi, he's always usually wrong, but it's quickly moderating. Let's ask the people that are having a hard time paying those high prices for eggs and using their credit cards. How quickly do you think that they feel that inflation is moderating? I bet they don't think it's very quick at all. And if people are adjusting and are changing their ways, well, the whole point of raising the rates was to slow down the economy. So they're exerting pain on the people. And look at all the jobs that are being lost here currently. So, you know, Dave, it's, you know, you can rejoice at the inflation number coming down, but we're still going to be heading into a recession. We're already in one. So we'll be heading into another one. But and those are the things that they never talk about or relate to. I saw old JP Diamond came out today and he pulled back on his, you know, hurricane commentary from last year. Well, you know, he got pressure from, you know, everyone else not to talk about how bad the recession is going to be this year. But anyway, that's, I don't know if you want to add anything more to that or not.
No, I think this next story, I mean, talk about continuing mixed signals. I mean, we see in the tech sector in particular a lot of layoffs, although some of these companies are suggesting that a good chunk of them are not necessarily due to positioning themselves for the coming recession. Rather, they're sort of trying to reverse bad decisions they've made over the last 2-3 years. You know, things that either didn't pan out or didn't pan out nearly as good as they thought they were going to. You can jump into this jobless claims number. I mean, the number shows that the Fed may be impacting economic growth, but at least as far as initial unemployment claims go, doesn't look like a whole lot of on the one hand, I was going to say it doesn't look like. I mean, since they've fallen to a 15-month low, that signals that, the Fed's work isn't really doing as much as it wants to. On the other hand, 200 new applications in a week, that's not chump change either. Go ahead.
And you know, it's funny. I mean, everybody always wants these knee-jerk reactions and so forth. And I don't pay attention to any of these reports that come out and, you know, to give us some sort of a hindsight or insight as to what the rest of the year holds. I mean, my gosh, we're 2 weeks into the year. And, there's so many things that distort all of these reports and all of these numbers. And no one, other things are not taken into accountability on some things. So we got a long way to go, but I don't think we're out of any hot water. And we continue to see, we've got debt that's too great to be paid. It's that simple. And you go back to the basics and you have to draw yourself out of some of these day-to-day, month, week-to-week, month-to-month reports and go back to the basics. And really see the amount of debt that's being created and where do we go from here. And where do we go from here? It really is not a pretty place. A lot of people will definitely be harmed financially by it. And so that's what you have to pay attention to. So they can cheerlead about the inflation moderating quickly to the downside. But where are you at? And that's what you have to pay attention to. Where are you at? So did you want to say anything more about these jobless claims, Dave?
Well, a number related to this discussion is average hourly pay growth. which has slowed down as well. In fact, they say to the slowest pace in 16 months, they being the Department of Labor. And of course, in their December meeting, the FOMC members predicted slower growth and higher unemployment this year and next as well. So what I know is this: mortgage rates are above 6%. Housing market is steeped in a recession. These rates are hammering housing. You've got the real mega tech companies, Amazon, Salesforce, laying off 18,000 and 8,000 workers, respectively. And you also have the other companies, Meta, Twitter, DoorDash, announcing big cuts. Well, and all told, there are over 1.6 million people receiving jobless aid as of the end of the year. So, no.
Well, you mentioned about the tech layoffs, Dave. You know, This is a sort of a related story in Silicon Valley. And, again, the tech giants, Meta, Amazon, Salesforce, Stripe, I don't know. I just have to laugh at this, some of these names, to Twitter. And let's not forget crypto. Thousands of workers get a firsthand look at, the underside of the tech's boom and bust cycles. Some are citing thousands of layoffs as proof the economy is in the early. This is the early stages of a widely forecast downturn. Executives always have a huge incentive to cast setbacks as economic issues rather than company shortcomings. But some experts are skeptical that the turmoil in tech is a true leading indicator. It certainly receives an abundant amount of media attention. The information technology industry employs only about 2% of all the jobs in the U.S. That's still 5 million people. And then let's put in that little multiplier in there.
Right.
So it really does affect more than just the 5 million people. We're up to 15 million plus. And I would think because these are higher paying jobs, the multiplier is probably 4, not 3 that we usually use. I hear the music, Dave.
Hey, that means we're heading into a break.
Hey, Dave, we are. And you know what, Dave?
What?
We'll be right back. So please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Oh, mercy, mercy, me. All things ain't what they used to be. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby all the night.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog. So I just want to say again, folks, if you have any questions for my Gold 101 that we do on Wednesdays now, send an email to discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Got a lot of good comments about the report yesterday about how you sell and what happens and how things are priced. And I would like, Dave, I haven't talked to you off air on this, but we're going to try to put the report on something so that maybe you can attach it to one of the...
Yeah, just need Todd knows create an MP3 file, some kind of audio file that we can then attach.
Yeah. So anyway, so we can attach that and then also maybe also place it on the website so people can go there and have a Gold 101. So thank you. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Well, you know, on Tuesday's program, we talked a little bit about Wells Fargo is retreating from the mortgage business, and Wells Fargo was an industry leader. But we saw that the high mortgage rates crushed demand for the loans. And trust me, Wells Fargo, yeah, they're you know, right up there with Jamie Dimon, you know. They paid billions and billions of dollars, I don't know how many billions, but in fines for their... the way they've done business and I don't know what you want to call it, Dave, but
shady fraudulent
transactions, but so they their legal troubles couldn't help, so they had said this earlier this week that they were going to only provide mortgages to existing customers. And but the bank is shrinking its mortgage servicing portfolio and completely walking away from correspondent lending, where it buys loans from smaller lenders. That's the same problem that got us into trouble in 2008. Part of it, not all of it, but part of it. Banks in general have been pulling back from the mortgage business for a while. And as a majority of home loans now originate at non-banks, like Rocket Mortgage, Loan Depot, and again, they were part of the problem because, I think they do a whole lot more subprime lending. That gets us into the problem. In 2010, non-banks originated 10% of mortgages, and by 2022, these companies had almost two-thirds of the business. a huge increase.
Yeah, that was an eye opener. The fine was $3.7 billion levied last month. Most of that from, I think, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. That's on top of other fines a couple years ago for various, what shall we, I'd like to say crimes against consumers, but I don't believe they were actually charged with anything, but they're bad. Bad practices, some bad decision making. Anyway, it's good to see them going by the wayside in this business. But listen to this. I mean, from 2021 to September 2022, Wells Fargo down 46% in loan origination volume. JP Morgan Chase down 39%. Bank of America down 23%. U.S. Bancorp down 19%. That's a lot when you're talking about $2.4 trillion. I mean, overall, total volume was down 33%. Rocket Mortgage, one of the non-banks, is down the most at 59% with its industry leading loan volume, $105 billion. So now, as of last year's third quarter, United Wholesale Mortgage, it's a Michigan-based public company that works directly with mortgage brokers, became the biggest mortgage lender in the country. UWM, as it's been known. And now, this is what it gets them. Their CEO, Matt Ishbia, not too long ago, last year, agreed to buy a majority stake in the professional basketball team Phoenix Suns. So there you go. His chump change, shall we say, going to paying these stars in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, you know what's interesting, though? You look at those numbers where the total volume of $2.4 trillion down 33% overall the industry. Now, with those homes comes refrigerators, heating units, stoves, air conditioners, all these appliances. And we don't see that industry down by 33%. It should be the same amount, wouldn't you think, Dave?
Give or take, yeah.
I mean, roughly,
the concept is well taken.
Yeah, but that should be a big story as we see these, you know, and what else? Carpets,
sure.
you name it. So,
yeah, systems.
Yeah, so you keep telling me how great the true economy out there is and that people aren't being affected by this. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. We were told we were in a real estate recession.
Well, you raise a good point.
The only part.
Earlier, with respect to this conversation, the multiplier effect certainly varies depending on what we're talking about. But in this case, the overall economy, I mean, over $21 trillion, you know, when you're talking about one industry being down several billion, particularly over a trillion, boy, that multiplier effect is huge. So remember that, ladies and gentlemen, that when you see it, read a story or hear from a friend in a conversation about specific numbers, always remember the multiplier effect. There are other businesses, companies, employees that are affected by that.
And, you know, we're talking about two industries. We just talked about tech and the amount of jobs that are being lost there. Now, and the mortgage, now we have that we're talking about the mortgage. The loans in that industry. So now you get two industries that should have some pretty powerful impacts on some of these numbers that are released to us and discussions and so forth. But we don't see them and we don't hear about them. And it's like one and one, okay? I do know one and one equals two. So I do know there's issues out there. And you think this is all suddenly going to turn around? You know, interest, mortgage interest rates, okay? If there's this type of a this much loss in the mortgage rates, Dave, in the mortgage loans, you would think that the rates would have dropped a whole lot more than what they have.
No, that's an interesting thought. I wonder if the loan origination fees, if the points that people are paying for to get these loans, I wonder how they're being affected. The premiums with the precious metals.
Yeah, so there just really isn't much that truly makes sense out there because the numbers just aren't adding up. So, you know, and again, we're 2 weeks into the year, so buckle up. We got a long way to go this year. And 1-800-375-4188. And this is kind of interesting, Dave. You're going to talk today, Levity is Golden, about communication and first impressions. And this is really a big deal because that's how we, you know, make our decisions lots of times.
Yeah, it turns out most of the time.
Yeah.
At least according to this latest study, which one of their major conclusions is that people tend to walk away from conversations underestimating how good of an impression we left on the other person or persons. Our perception of how well-liked we are by our coworkers or neighbors or whomever nestled into our brains, affecting everything from how good we feel about ourselves to how well we perform at our jobs. In this study published in the Journal of Organizational Behavior and Human Decision Processes, it's a mouthful, researchers paired up conversation partners, then asked them how they felt they came off in that first interaction. And they discovered this, what they call a liking gap. People routinely underrated the first impressions they made. They also found the gap is widest after initial conversation, but starts to shrink as people get to know each other. That's because our first thoughts about how well we're liked may be based entirely on conjecture. But these thoughts might start to change as we see hard evidence from others as to how much they like us. I mean, think compliments, gifts, favors. Our thoughts about who likes us and how much influence our behavior. If we're confident in how we're perceived, we might be likelier to initiate plans with a new group of friends or raise our hands for a new opportunity at the work or the organizations we volunteer at. Now, many of the most important moments in people's lives revolve around the first conversations they have with each other. People have many conversations like these over the course of their lives, yet this study found that initial conversations are also a source of anxiety. Again, as people wonder and worry about the impression they're leaving on others. Well, it turns out people have good reason to be concerned. Since the earliest days of research on social perception, which I think dates back to the early 1930s, it's been clear that people's impressions of others form rapidly and once formed, those impressions endure. Thus, the cliche, first impressions equal lasting impressions. Indeed, within seconds of striking up a conversation, people have already gleaned from the faces of their conversation partners their kindness and competence, for example. And that, in turn, can affect everything from attributions of legal responsibility to snap judgments of whether that person would make a good CEO or other type of employee. And give people even more time to talk, they'll size up their conversation partners on important social dimensions, like how much they self-disclose without being asked, and good old gossip. Now, this, the study says, along with unconscious behaviors like the tendency to mimic each other, is what determines whether conversation partners click and establish that rapport that leads to, you know, lasting friendships, second and third dates, what have you. In short, Melody, by the end of the first conversation, people have already formed strong impressions of one another. And those first impressions are not fleeting. They set the tone for the rest of the relationship, however long or short. Yes, again, first impressions are lasting from external as well as internal some sources. And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden.
The one thing that I thought about it, you said in 1930.
Yeah.
Was when this was all sort of...
I think 33.
Sort of
particular, yeah, study.
Came to where they began to study and to think that this was important. Well, that's also with the evolving of media too, I would think. Because now you have, you know, a little bigger.
You mean social media?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine?
So.
I'm sure if we looked for a bibliography of studies. Oh, my gosh.
They would have begun with the creation of radio.
Yeah, yeah.
And it evolved. I mean, I shared this on this program many times. I mean, I was manager of a marketing research, and that's, you know, what it was. It was, you know, if Tide, for instance, wanted to change their design on their box, we'd get these people to come in, they'd get paid, and they'd sit down, and they'd go through this program. Even on those juries, the mock juries, we held those. And that's all about first impressions. To how they're going to change. And so it's sort of to some degree, they use that research and surveys and so forth and to manipulate, I guess, to some degree, or to, manipulate the behavior of others. Of how that behavior can change, I guess.
Absolutely. I that's quite plausible. Yeah. I think that's, I see that in, you know, whether, and I don't engage in a lot of it in general, but you see stories all the time that sort of back that up on Facebook and Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a game.
It's an interesting, not necessarily trustworthy of a world out there anymore.
Mm. Amazon, we're heading into a break, and I can't believe we didn't get this. They're changing their way. They're doing a little bit of their business, too. So I'm not sure if it's because of all their cutbacks or not. But we'll have to talk about that at another time as we're heading into a break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody off this final segment, taking care of other client business. You know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. And one more time, don't forget to give her feedback about the Wednesday education programs. Boy, here's a story I actually wish we could have fit in last segment while Melody was still here, because we both together love to rib her, not Melody, but Janet Yellen. According to an unnamed White House official, I'm guessing his chief of staff, Ron Klain, President Biden and Janet Yellen agreed late last year she will stay on as Secretary of the Treasury for the remainder of his first term. White House officials in the fall of last year had been preparing for Yellen's potential departure, which we talked about, after the midterm elections in November, depending in part on the outcome of the elections. In a December conversation, Yellen brought up the reports about her potential departure, and she asked Biden if he wanted her to stay. Biden responded, yes, please do. The decision to keep Yellen in the role avoids an immediate political headache for Biden and his administration in finding a successor that have to be confirmed by the Senate. A major issue coming the Treasury's way is the need to raise the government's debt limit later this year. Talk more about that in a minute. Republicans who retook the House in the midterms have threatened to not raise the debt ceiling before spending cuts in the federal budget, even if it damages the global economy through the U.S. defaulting on its loans, which has never happened before. Not passing judgment on the issue right now. I will in a coming blog. During a 2021 showdown over the debt ceiling, Yellen called on Congress to pass increases to the limit through regular order with broad bipartisan support. That was before Republicans held a majority in the House. The debt ceiling does not determine how much the government spends, but only how much government can borrow to pay for spending it has already approved. R's and D's worked together to raise the borrowing limit three times through the Trump administration and several times in other previous ones. Now, that won't likely change now that the Republicans back with a slim House majority. I see a lot of D crossover votes, however, to counter what I believe will be a lot of R's voting against raising the ceiling. We shall see, won't we? Well, if you just assume that drama over the government's debt ceiling and shutdowns would work out eventually and that the impact would be short-lived, you would have been right, in the past anyway. But there are warning signs that this time could be different, as I just alluded to. A self-inflicted fiscal crisis could come at a most precarious time amid a fragile economy and undermine a treasury market that underpins the world financial system. Again, Republicans have claimed a razor-thin majority in the House, and the GOP caucus includes a faction of, let's admit it, burn-it-all-down policy types. When the government hits its next legal debt limit, likely late summer or fall this year, House R's may refuse to raise it without extracting major policy concessions that the Senate D's and the Biden administration will be loath to agree to. And that would put that catastrophic default on the table, a repeat of the 2011 standoff that sent markets gyrating wildly and triggered a downgrade of the nation's credit rating. There's a sort of reflexiveness between Washington and Wall Street, where turmoil in financial markets tends to focus the minds of Congress, acting as a forcing mechanism that helps negotiators forge consensus. Doesn't always happen, but with the big ticket items like this, it usually does. As long as markets don't show too much alarm about a possible debt crisis, and right now they don't, there's less urgency to find a bipartisan path forward. Of course, as we get closer to the time that the government's going to run out of money to spend, that'll be a different scenario, right? And that makes darker scenarios much more plausible. Such as if the government were to stop paying some of its bills, or if the legal status of newly issued debt comes into question. Liam Donovan at the firm Bracewell said, in order for Congress to act expeditiously, there must be a sense of gravity around the consequences should they fail to act. And he added, at this point, conventional market wisdom is actively undermining that sort of pressure by projecting unmitigated confidence that it will all work out. The optimistic outlook on Wall Street, I think, makes it more likely that some ugly days are in store later this year. Hey, on a much more positive note, Double Line Capital CEO billionaire Jeffrey Gundlach turned bullish on gold after it crossed the 1800 level. He now believes it's a good time to buy and hold it. Of course, we believe that any time's a good time to buy and hold. But Gundlach recently told Kitco News, over the past 2.5 years, you haven't had much action in gold other than sideways. In other currencies, gold has done quite well, and now as the dollar is weakening, gold is back, and it's above its 200-day moving average. Gold is one of Gundlach's recommendations for assets to own in 2023. He says, quote, it's a good time to buy and own gold. He believes that a lower dollar will certainly help this year. Dollar already peaked in 2022, he believes, and doesn't see the U.S. dollar index returning anywhere close to that peak of 115. It fell below 103 yesterday and was almost a full point down again today, in the low 102s. So from the big picture perspective, Gundlach said the Treasury yield curve is screaming recession right now because of the Fed's more aggressive actions in the second half of last year. But that's just one of many indicators he believes pointing to a recession this year. He noted the three-month to 10-year inverted, that's the curve, their yields, inverted not too long ago, and the 10-year yielded more than 200 basis points than the three-month bill. We see that we have exactly the setup that goes all the way back to the Volcker days. I'm quoting him now. We haven't seen the three to tens this inverted since the early 1980s. Other indicators pointing to a looming recession, he says, include the dramatic drop in the household savings rate, consumers dipping into credit cards, especially for basic expenses, the falling leading economic index, and recent PMI data. Gundlach said he's not ruling out deflation either as CPI comes down this year. He compared the movement of inflation to a swinging pendulum. He said it's absurd to believe that the inflation rate would drop from 9.1% to 2% and then magically stop there. It's almost like a law of physics when you have a pendulum. Adding, when it gets to an extreme and starts going back along the arc the other way, doesn't stop down in the middle, it goes past the middle. That's why he believes price pressure will fall much more if the Fed manages to get inflation back to 2%. I would suggest, quote, that if it gets to 2% over the course of 2023, inflation will probably go negative on a year-over-year basis. Gundlach also said bond allocation will prove much more rewarding this year as a result. He believes the Fed will have trouble getting rates up to 5% and will be forced to cut, in fact, this year. Instead, he says, quote, they're going to make it just under 5% by May or June and then start cutting. By the end of 2023, the Fed funds rate is predicted by the bond market to be lower than it is today. We shall see, ladies and gentlemen. We shall see. Now, where to go next? Policymakers and economists are finding that when it comes to fighting rising prices, it indeed takes a village. Yes, the Fed's interest rate hikes aren't the only game in town. Despite the latest inflation numbers, the story of how the economy got to this point isn't just about Fed Chair Jerome Powell. It's as complicated as inflation itself. Last time inflation ran hot in the U.S. decades ago, the Fed famously hiked rates hard, triggering double-digit unemployment. Well, the Fed's using the same strategy today, but it's not working alone. The Biden administration and some European governments also flipped the key fiscal policy levers, particularly around energy. And that's a major inflation driver as well. The White House helped push gas prices lower through its use of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The White House is also trying to spur more oil production in other ways. Meanwhile, the government late last year passed measures to cap energy prices in that country. Starting this month, every household and business gets a certain amount of gas and electricity, up to just 80% of past usage, but at a below market price. The idea is to help people pay their bills without increasing the demand for energy, which of course would push prices back up. Economist Isabella Weber, the University of Massachusetts Amherst, believes that if governments can figure out ways to manage price shocks in certain sectors like energy, housing, etc., then get ahead of future inflation and avoid a recession. I think it might be a little too late, but time will tell. Even the White House's handling of the potential rail strike last year was done with an eye toward managing inflation. Claudia Sahm, who's a former Fed economist, said a strike's impact on trade and supply chains would have certainly been inflationary. So the White House walked a tightrope, forcing workers to accept a deal that wasn't satisfied to many of them or their advocates. Plus fiscal spending, the form of big cash transfers to Americans of the sort we saw in 2020 and 2021 isn't a thing anymore. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are wary of contributing to inflation. The bottom line, well, Psalm says anyway, we all want simple stories. We want something to just be the magic bullet and be done with them. That's never true in life. And it's certainly not true in a 20-plus trillion-dollar economy. So, the time we have left in today's program, perhaps because of all of this, it may be time to update our inflation narrative. The ultra-hot reports that defined the first half of last year appear to be in the rearview mirror for now, anyway. That improves the odds that price pressures can, well, come down further without too much more excessive economic pain. Well, that's the key takeaway from December CPI release this morning, which confirmed cooler inflation as last year came to a close. But look, the nation's inflation problem isn't over, to be sure. But so far, it appears inflation is slowing while the job market is still relatively healthy, aside from the tech industry that Melody and I talked about earlier. As Princeton economist Alan Blinder put it in an op-ed last week, inflation was vastly lower in the second half of 2022 than the first, yet hardly anyone seems to have noticed. And that's a teller. The final 3 months of 2022 core inflation came in at an annualized 3.1%, higher than the Fed aims for, but hardly crisis levels. The second quarter of the year, that number was 7.9%. Significant decline occurring alongside a labor market that, well, by nearly all measures, is still flourishing, albeit so tenuously. Hold on to your hats, ladies and gentlemen. The roller coaster is moving. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the morning. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.